Chapter 9. A quote from Violet Sorengale's personal addendum to the Book of Brennan. I will not die today. I'm so completely screwed. Zayden steps forward, all 6 foot everything of him, dressed in midnight fighting leathers and a tight-fitted short-sleeved shirt that only seems to make the shimmering dark rebellion relics on his skin seem like an even bigger warning, which I know is ridiculous, but somehow true. My heartbeat kicks up to a full gallop, as if my body knows the truth my mind hasn't quite accepted yet. I'm about to have my ass kicked, or worse. You are all in for a treat, Professor Emeterio says, clapping his hands. Zayden's one of the best fighters we have. Watch and learn. Of course you are, I mutter, my stomach twisting like I'm the one who's been snacking on Walwyn fruit peels. A corner of Zayden's mouth rises in a smirk, and the gold flecks in his eyes seem to dance. The sadistic ass is enjoying this. My knees, ankles, and wrist are wrapped, the white cloth protecting my healing thumb a startling contrast against my black leathers. A little out of her league, don't you think? Dane argues from the side of the mat, tension radiating from every word. Relax, Atos. Zayden looks over my shoulder, his gaze hardening toward where I know Dane is standing, where he always stands when I'm on the mat. The look Zayden gives him makes me realize he's been taking it easy on me in the glaring department. She'll be in one piece when I'm finished teaching her. I hardly think it's fair, Dane's voice rises. No one asked you to think, squad leader. Zayden fires back as he moves to the side, discarding every weapon on his body. And there's a lot of them. And handing them to Imogen. The bitter, illogical taste of jealousy fills my mouth. But there's no time to examine that particular oddity, not when there's only seconds before he's in front of me again. You don't think you'll need those? I ask, palming my own blades. His chest is massive, with wide shoulders and heavily muscled arms alongside. A target this big should be easy to hit. Nope, not when you've brought enough for the both of us. A wicked smile curves his mouth as he stretches out his hand and curls his fingers into a come-hither motion. Let's go. My heart beats faster than the wings of a hummingbird as I take a fighting stance and wait for him to strike. This mat is only 20 feet in either direction, and yet my entire world narrows to its confines and the danger within. He's not in my squad. He can kill me without punishment. I fling a dagger straight at his ridiculously well-sculpted chest. He fucking catches it and clucks his tongue. Already seen that move. Holy shit, is he fast. I have to be faster. It's the single advantage I have. That's my only thought as I move forward in a swipe-and-kick combo Rhiannon's drilled into me over the past 6 weeks. He artfully dodges my blade and then captures my leg. The earth spins and I slam onto my back, the sudden impact driving the air from my lungs. But he doesn't go for the kill. Instead, he drops the dagger he's caught and kicks it off the mat. And a second later, when air squeaks into my lungs, I lunge up with the next blade, going for his thigh. He blocks my strike with his forearm, then grips my wrist with his opposite hand and plucks the knife out of my hand, leaning down so his face is only inches from mine. Going for blood today, are we, violence? He whispers. Metal hits the mat again, and he kicks it past my head and out of my reach. He's not taking my daggers to use against me. He's disarming me just to prove he can. My blood boils. My name is Violet, I seethe. I think my version fits you better. He releases my wrist and stands, offering me a hand. We're not done yet. My chest heaves, still recovering from the way he's knocked the wind out of me, and I take the offering. He tugs me to my feet, then twists my arm behind my back and yanks me against his hard chest, pinning our joined hands before I have a chance to get my balance. Damn it, I snap. There's a tug at my thigh, and another of my daggers is pressed to my throat as his chest rests against the back of my head. His forearm is locked across my ribs, and he might as well be a statue for all the give there is in his frame. There's no use slamming my head back. He's so tall that I'd only annoy him. Don't trust a single person who faces you on this mat, he warns in a hiss, his breath warm against the shell of my ear, and even though we're surrounded by people, I realize he's quiet for a reason. This lesson is just for me. Even someone who owes me a favor? I counter, my voice just as low. My shoulder starts to protest the unnatural angle, but I don't move. I won't give him the satisfaction. He drops the third dagger he's taken from me and kicks it forward, to where Dane stands, the other two already in his hand. There's murder in his eyes as he glares at Zayden. I'm the one who decides when to grant that favor, not you. Zayden releases my hand and steps back. I whirl, punching for his throat, and he knocks my hand aside. Good, he says with a smile, deflecting my next blow without so much as a hitch to his breath. Going for the throat is your best option, as long as it's exposed. Fury makes me kick out again in the same pattern, muscle memory taking over, and he captures that leg again, this time snatching the dagger sheathed there and dropping it to the mat before he lets me go, cocking a disappointed eyebrow at me. I expect you to learn from your mistakes. He kicks it away. I only have 5 left, all sheathed at my ribs. Gripping one and putting my hands up defensively, I begin to circle him, and to my absolute annoyance, he doesn't even bother facing me. He just stands there in the center of the mat, his boots planted and his arms loose as I move around him. You going to prance, or are you going to strike? Fuck him. I punch forward, but he dips and my knife sails over his shoulder, missing him by 6 inches. My stomach drops as he grips my arm, yanking me forward and flipping me around the side of his body. I'm airborne for a heartbeat before I smack into the mat, my ribs taking the impact. He cranks my arm into a submission hold, and white-hot pain shoots down the limb as I cry out, dropping the dagger. But he's not done. No, his knee is in my ribs, and though he holds my arm captive with one hand, the other plucks a dagger from its sheath and flings it toward Dane's feet before taking another and holding it to the tender area where my jaw meets my neck. Then he leans closer. Taking out your enemy before the battle is really smart. I'll give that to you, he whispers, his warm breath brushing the shell of my ear. Oh gods, he knows what I've been doing. The pain in my arm is nothing compared to the nausea churning in my stomach at the thought of what he might do with that knowledge. Problem is, if you aren't testing yourself in here, he scrapes the dagger down my neck, but there's no warm trickle of blood, so I know he hasn't cut me, then you're not going to get any better. You'd rather I die, no doubt, I fire back, the side of my face pressed into the mat. This isn't just painful, it's humiliating. And be denied the pleasure of your company, he mocks. I fucking hate you. The words are past my lips before I can shut my mouth. That doesn't make you special. The pressure releases from my chest and arm as he gets on his feet, kicking both daggers toward Dane. 2 more. I only have 2 more, and now my indignation and anger far outweigh my fear. Ignoring Zayden's outstretched hand, I gain my feet and his lips curve into an approving smile. She can be taught. She's a quick learner, I retort. That remains to be seen. He backs up 2 steps, putting a little space between us before crooking his fingers at me again. You've made your damn point, I snap loud enough that I hear Imogen gasp. Trust me. I've barely gotten started. He folds his arms and leans back on his heels, clearly waiting for me to move. I don't think, I just act, going low and kicking out the backs of his knees. He goes down like a tree, the sound more than satisfying, and I pounce, trying for a headlock. Doesn't matter how big someone is, they still need air. Catching his throat in the crook of my elbow, I squeeze. Instead of going for my arms, he twists, grabbing a hold of the backs of my thighs, so I lose my leverage and our bodies careen into a roll. He comes out on top. Of course he does. His forearm rests against my throat, not cutting off air, but definitely capable of it, and his hips have mine pinned, my legs useless on either side of his as he lies heavily between my thighs. He's unmovable. Everything around us fades as my world narrows to the arrogant glint in his gaze. He's all I can see, all I can feel, and I can't let him win. I slip one of my last daggers free and go for his shoulder. He seizes my wrist and pins it above my head. Shit, shit, shit. Heat rushes up my neck and flames lick my cheeks as he lowers his face so his lips are only inches away from mine. I can make out every speck of gold in his onyx eyes, every bump and ridge of his scar. Beautiful fucking asshole. My breath catches and my body warms. The traitorous bitch. You are not attracted to toxic men, I remind myself. And yet here I am, getting all attracted. I have been since the first second I saw him, if I feel like being honest. He pushes his fingers into my fist, forcing it open, then sends the blade skittering across the mat before letting go of my wrist. Get your dagger, he orders. What? My eyes fly wide. He has me defenseless and in the kill position already. Get your dagger, he repeats, taking my hand in his and retrieving the last blade I have. His fingers curl over mine, clasping the hilt. Fire races along my skin at the feel of his fingers lacing with mine. Toxic, dangerous, wants to kill you. Nope, doesn't matter. My pulse still skitters like a teenager. You're tiny, he says it like an insult. Well aware, my eyes narrow. So stop going for bigger moves that expose you. He drags the tip of the dagger down his side. A rib shot would have worked just fine. Then he guides our hands around his back, making himself vulnerable. Kidneys are a good fit from this angle, too. I swallow, refusing to think of other things that are a good fit at this angle. He leads our hands to his waist, his gaze never leaving mine. Chances are, if your opponent is in armor, it's weak here. Those are three easy places you could have struck before your opponent would have had time to stop you. They're also fatal wounds, and I've avoided those at all costs. Do you hear me? I nod. Good. Because you can't poison every enemy you come across, he whispers, and I blanch. You're not going to have time to offer tea to some bravey griffin rider when they come at you. How did you know? I finally ask. My muscles lock, including my thighs, which just happen to still be bracketing his hips. His eyes darken. Oh, violence, you're good, but I've known better poison masters. The trick is to not make it quite so obvious. My lips part and I bite back a retort that I was careful not to be obvious. I think she's been taught enough for the day, Dane barks, reminding me that we're far from alone. No, we're a damned spectacle. He always that overprotective, Zayden grumbles, pressing up from the mat a few inches. He cares about me, I glare at him. He's holding you back. Don't worry, your little poisoning secret is safe with me. Zayden arches a brow as if to remind me that I'm the keeper of one of his secrets, too. Then he guides our hands back to my ribs and slides the ruby-hilted blade back into its sheath. The move is unnervingly hot. You're not going to disarm me? I challenge as he releases his grip and pushes up more, removing his weight from my body. My ribs expand as I take my first full breath. Nope. Defenseless women have never been my type. We're done for today. He stands, then walks away without another word, taking his weapons from Imogen as I roll to my knees. Every part of my body aches, but I manage to stand. There's pure relief in Dane's eyes when I reach his side to retrieve the dagger Zayden took from me. You all right? I nod, my fingers trembling as I rearm myself. He's had every chance and every reason to kill me. And now he's let me walk away twice. What kind of game is he playing? Atos, Zayden calls out from across the mat. Dane's head snaps up and his jaw locks. She could use a little less protection and a little more instruction. Zayden stares Dane down until he nods. Professor Emeterio calls the next challenge. I'm just surprised he let you live, Dane says later that night in his room, as his thumbs dig into the muscle between my neck and shoulder. It hurts so deliciously. It was well worth the pain of sneaking up here. I hardly think he'd command respect by snapping my neck on the mat. His blankets are soft against my belly and chest as I lay on his bed, bare from the waist up except for the constricting band around my breasts and ribs. Besides, that's not his way. Dane's hands paws on my skin. Because you know what his way is? The guilt of keeping Zayden's secret makes my stomach drop. He told me he didn't see a reason to kill me himself when the parapet would do it, I answer truthfully. And let's face it, he's had plenty of chances to take me out if he really wanted. Dane hums in that thoughtful tone of his, continuing to work out my stiff and aching muscles as he leans over from the side of his bed. Rhiannon drilled me for another 2 hours after dinner, and I was barely able to move by the end of it. Guess I wasn't the only one Zayden scared this afternoon. Do you think he could be plotting against Navarre and still have bonded Sigael? I ask, my cheek against his blanket. I did at first. His hands moved down my spine, pressing into the knots that made lifting my arms almost impossible that last half hour of training tonight. But then, I bonded Cath, and I realized that dragons would do anything to protect the Vale and their sacred hatching grounds. There's no way any dragon would have bonded Ryerson or any of the Separatists if they weren't honest about protecting Navarre. But would a dragon even know if you were lying? I turn my head so I can see his face. Yeah, he grins. Cath would know because he's in my head. It's impossible to hide something like that from your dragon. Is he always in your head? I know it's against the rules to ask. Almost everything about bonds are off limits for discussion, given how secretive dragons are, but it's Dane. Yeah, he answers, his smile softening. I can block him out if I need to, and they'll teach you that after threshing. His expression falls. What is it? I sit up, sliding one of his pillows across my chest and leaning back against the headboard. I talked to Colonel Markham this evening. He walks over and pulls his chair out from his desk and takes a seat, then rests his head in his hands. Did something happen? Fear races down my spine. Is it Mira's wing? No. Dane's head snaps up, and there's so much misery in his eyes that I swing my feet off the bed. It's nothing like that. I told him that I think Ryerson wants to kill you. I blink, sitting fully back onto the bed. Oh, well, that's not really news, is it? Everyone who's read a history of the rebellion can put two and two together, Dane. Yeah, well, I told him about Barlow, too, and Seifert. He rubs his hand over his hair. Don't think I didn't notice the way Seifert shoved you into the wall before formation this morning. He lifts his brows at me. He's just pissed that I took his dagger at that first challenge, I squeeze the pillow tighter. And Rhiannon told me you found crushed flowers on your bed last week? He stares me down. I shrug. They were just dead flowers. They were mutilated violets. His mouth tightens, and I go to him, resting my hands on his head. It's not like they came with a death note or anything, I tease, stroking his soft brown hair. He looks up at me, the mage lights making his eyes a little brighter above his trim beard. They're threats. I shrug. Every cadet gets threatened. Every cadet doesn't have to wrap their knees every day, he fires back. The injured ones do. My brow furrows, annoyance taking root in my chest. Why would you tell Markham about it anyway? He's a scribe, and there's nothing he would do, even if he could. He said he'd still take you, Dane blurts, his hands flying to my hips, holding me in place when I try to step away. I asked him if he'd allow you into the scribe quadrant for your own safety, and he said yes. They'd put you with the first years. It's not like you'd have to wait until next conscription day or anything. You what? I twist, breaking my hold and back away from my best friend. I saw a way to get you out of danger, and I took it, he stands. You went behind my back because you think I'm not cutting it. The truth of the words tightens around my chest like a vice, cutting off my air instead of holding me together, leaving me weak and breathless. Dane knows me better than anyone. And if he still thinks I can't do this after I've made it this far. Tears well in my eyes, but I refuse to let them fall. Instead, I tuck my chin and grab my dragon scale vest, pull it over my head, then wrench the laces together at the small of my back and tie them. Dane sighs. I never said I don't think you can cut it, Violet.
You say it every day, I snap. You say it when you walk me from formation to class, which I know makes you late for flight line. You say it when you yell at your wing leader when he takes me to the mat. He had no right to. He's my wing leader. I shrug my tunic over my head. He has the right to do whatever he wants, including execute me. And that's why you need to get the hell out of here. Dane laces his fingers behind his neck and begins to pace. I've been watching Vi. He's just toying with you like a cat plays with a mouse before the kill. I've held my own so far. My satchel is heavy with books as I settle it over my shoulder. I've won every challenge, except today when he wiped the floor with you time and again. He grasps my shoulders. Or did you miss the part where he took every weapon so you knew exactly how easy it is to defeat you? I raise my chin and glare at him. I was there, and I've survived almost 2 months in this place, which is more than I can say for a fourth of my year. Do you know what happens at threshing? He asks, his tone dropping. Are you calling me ignorant? Rage bubbles in my veins. It's not just about bonding, he continues. They throw every first year into the training grounds, the ones you've never been to. And then the second and third years are supposed to watch as you decide which dragons to approach and which to run from. I know how it works, my jaw clenches. Yeah, well, while the riders are watching, the first years are taking out their vendettas and eliminating any liabilities to the wing. I'm not a damned liability. My chest tightens again because deep down, I know, on the physical level, that I am. Not to me, he whispers, a hand rising to cradle my cheek. But they don't know you the way I do, Vi. And while the first years like Barlow and Seaford are hunting you, we'll have to watch. I'll have to watch, Violet. The break in his voice takes the anger right out of me. We are not allowed to help you, to save you. Dane, and when they gather the bodies for the roll, no one's going to document how that cadet died. You're just as likely to fall under Barlow's knife as a dragon's talon. I breathe through the jolt of fear. Markham says that he'll put you through the first year without telling your mother. By the time she finds out, you'll already be inducted as a scribe. There's nothing she can do after that. He lifts his other hand so he's holding my face between both palms, tipping it up toward his. Please, if you won't do it for yourself, then do it for me. My heart stutters and I sway, his reasoning tugging me toward exactly what he's suggesting. But you've made it this far, a part of me whispers. I can't lose you, Violet, he whispers, resting his forehead against mine. I just can't. I squeeze my eyes shut. This is my way out, and yet I don't want to take it. Just promise me you'll think about it, he begs. We still have 4 weeks until threshing. Just think about it. The hope in his tone and the tender way he holds me cuts through my defenses. I'll think about it.
Chapter 10. A quote from page 46, The Book of Brennan. Don't underestimate the challenge of the gauntlet, Mira. It's designed to test your balance, strength, and agility. The times don't matter for shit, only that you make it to the top. Reach for the ropes when you have to. Coming in last is better than coming in dead. I look up and up and up, fear coiling in my stomach like a snake ready to strike. Well, that's, Rhiannon swallows, her head tilted just as far back as mine as we stare at the menacing obstacle course that's carved into the front of a ridgeline so steep, it might as well be a cliff. The zigzagging death trap of a trail rises above us, climbing in five distinct switchbacks of 180-degree turns, each increasing in difficulty on the way to the top of the bluff that divides the citadel from the flight field and the vale. Amazing, Aurelie sighs. Rhiannon and I turn, both staring at her like she must have hit her head.
You think that hellscape looks amazing? Rhiannon asks. I've been waiting years for this, Aurelie grins, her normally serious black eyes dancing in the morning sun as she rubs her hands together, shifting from one toned leg to the other in glee. My dad, he was a rider until he retired last year, used to set up obstacle courses like this all the time so we could practice. And Chase, my brother, said it's the best part of being here before threshing. It's a real adrenaline rush. He's with the Southern Wing, right? I ask, focusing on the obstacle course running up the side of a fucking cliff. It looks more like a death trap than an adrenaline rush, but sure, we can go with that. Positive thinking for the win, right? Yep, pretty much desk duty for all the action they see near the Crovelin border. She shrugs and points about two-thirds up the course. He said to watch out for those giant posts jutting from the side of the cliff. They spin, and you can get crushed between them if you're not fast enough. Oh, good. I was wondering when it might get difficult, Rhiannon mutters. Thanks, Aurelie. I locate the series of nearly touching 3-foot-wide logs that jut out from the rocky terrain, like a set of round steps rising from the ground to the switchback above it, and nod. Go fast. Got it. You could have included that tidbit, Brennan. The obstacle course is the embodiment of my worst nightmare. For the first time since Dane begged me to leave last week, I consider Markham's offer. There are no death courses in the Scribe Quadrant, that's for certain. But you've already made it this far. Ah, there she is, the little voice that's been riding my shoulder lately, daring to give me hope that I might actually survive presentation. Still not sure why they call it the Gauntlet, Riddick says from my right, blowing into his cupped hands to ward off the morning chill. The sun hasn't touched this little crevice, but it's shining above the last quarter of the course. To ensure dragons keep coming to threshing by weeding out the weaklings. Tynan sneers from Riddick's other side, folding his arms over his chest as he casts a pointed look at me. I shoot him a glare and then shake it off. He's been pissy ever since Rhiannon handed his ass to him on the mat at assessment. Knock it the fuck off, Riddick snaps, earning the entire squad's attention. My eyebrows lift. I've never seen Riddick lose his temper or use anything but humor to defuse a situation before. What's your problem? Tynan shoves a strand of thick, dark hair from his eyes and pivots like he's going to stare some intimidation into Riddick. But it doesn't really work out, seeing as Riddick is twice as wide and half a foot taller. My problem? You think because you made friends with Barlow and Seifert that you have the right to be a dick to your own squadmate? Riddick challenges. Exactly. Squadmate. Tynan gestures toward the obstacle course. Our times aren't just ranked individually, Riddick. We're scored as a squad, too, which is how the order for presentation is decided. Do you really think any dragon wants to bond a cadet who walks in after every other squad in the processional? Fine, he has a point. It's a shitty one, but it's there. They're not timing us for presentation today, asshole. Riddick takes a step forward. Stop. Sawyer shuffles between the two, shoving Tynan's chest hard enough to make him stagger back into the girl behind him. Take it from someone who made it through presentation last year. Your time doesn't mean anything. The last cadet to walk in last year bonded just fine. And some of the cadets in the first squad onto the field were passed over. Little bitter about that, aren't you? Tynan smirks. Sawyer ignores the barb. Besides, it's not called the Gauntlet because it weeds out cadets. It's called the Gauntlet because this is the cliff that guards the Veil, Professor Emeterio says, walking up behind our squad, his shaved head glinting in the growing sunlight. Plus actual gauntlets, armored gloves made of metal, are slippery as hell, and the name stuck about 20 years ago. He cocks a brow at Tynan and Sawyer. Are you two done arguing? Because all nine of you have exactly an hour to get to the top before it's another squad's chance to practice. And from what I've seen of your agility on the mat, you're going to need every second. There's a grumble of assent in our little group. As you know, hand-to-hand challenges are on hold for the next 2.5 weeks before presentation, so you can focus here. Professor Emeterio flips a page on the little notebook he carries. Sawyer, you're going to show them how it's done, since you already have the lay of the land. Then Pryor, Trina, Tynan, Rhiannon, Riddick, Violet, Aurelie, and Luca. A smile curves the harsh line of his mouth as he finishes calling out every name in our squad, and we file into order. You're the only squad to remain intact since Parapet. That's incredible. Your squad leader must be very proud. Wait here for a second. He walks past us, waving at someone high up on the cliff. No doubt that someone has a watch. Atos is especially proud of Sorengale. Tynan gifts me with a mocking sneer once our instructor is out of hearing range. I see red. Look, if you want to talk shit about me, that's one thing, but leave Dane out of it. Tynan, Sawyer warns, shaking his head. Like it doesn't bother any of you that our squad leader is fucking one of us? Tynan throws out his hands. I'm not, I start, indignation getting the best of me before I can take a deep breath.
Honestly, it's none of your goddamn business who I'm sleeping with, Tynan.
Though if I'm going to get accused, can't I have some of the perks? If I know Dane, he's hung up on the whole fraternization is discouraged within the chain of command thing, like this asshole. But surely Dane would actually make a move if he really wanted to. Right?
It is if it means you get preferential treatment, Luca adds in.
For fuck's sake, Rhiannon mumbles, rubbing the bridge of her nose.
Luca, Tynan, shut up. They're not sleeping together. They've been friends since they were kids.
Or do you not know enough about our own leadership to know his dad is her mom's aide?
Tynan's eyes widen like he's actually surprised. Really? Really, I shake my head and study the course. Shit, I'm sorry, Barlow said.
And that's your first mistake, Riddick interjects. Listening to that sadistic ass is gonna get you killed. And you're lucky Atos isn't here.
True. Dane would more than take exception to Tynan's assumptions and probably assign him cleanup duty for a month. Good thing he's on the flight field this time of day. Zayden would just beat the shit out of him. I blink, shoving that comparison and any other thought of Zayden Ryerson far out of my head.
Here we go, Professor Emeterio walks to the head of our line. You'll get your time at the top of the course, if you make it. But remember, you'll still have 9 practice sessions before we rank you for presentation in 2.5 weeks. Which will determine if the dragons find you worthy at threshing.
Wouldn't it make more sense to let first year start practicing this thing right after Parapet?
Rhiannon asks.
You know, to give us a little more time so we don't die?
No, Professor Emeterio replies. The timing is part of the challenge. Any words of wisdom, Sawyer?
Sawyer blows out a slow breath, his gaze following the treacherous course. There are ropes every 6 feet that run from the top of the sheer cliffside to the bottom, he says. So if you start to fall, reach out and grab a rope. It'll cost you 30 seconds, but death costs you more.
Awesome. I mean, there's a perfectly good set of steps over there,
Riddick points to the steep staircase carved into the cliff beside the wide switchbacks of the gauntlet.
Stairs are for reaching the flight field on the top of the ridgeline after presentation,
Professor Emeterio says, then lifts his hands toward the course and flicks his wrist, pointing at various obstacles. The 15-foot log at the start of the uphill climb begins to spin. The pillars on the third ascent shake. The giant wheel at the first switchback starts its counterclockwise rotation, and those little posts aurally mentioned, they all twist in opposite directions. Every one of the 5 ascents on this course is designed to mimic the challenges you'll face in battle. Professor Emeterio turns to look at us, his face just as stern as it is during our usual combat training. From the balance you must keep on the back of your dragon, to the strength you'll need to hold your seat during maneuvers, to, he gestures upward, toward the last obstacle that looks like a 90-degree ramp from this angle. The stamina you'll need to fight on the ground, then still be able to mount your dragon at a second's notice. The post knock a chunk of granite loose, and the rock tumbles down the course, smacking every obstacle in its path until it crashes 20 feet in front of us. If there was ever a metaphor for my life, well, that's it.
Whoa,
Trina whispers, her brown eyes wide as she stares at the pulverized rock. I'm the smallest of our squad, but Trina is the quietest, the most reserved. I can count on both hands the number of times she's spoken to me since parapet. If she didn't have friends in First Wing, I'd worry. But she doesn't have to open up to us to survive the quadrant.
You all right? I ask her in a whisper.
She swallows and nods, one of her auburn ringlet curls bouncing against her forehead.
What if we can't make it up?
Luca asks from my right, securing her long hair in a loose braid, her usual haughtiness not so in your face today.
What's the alternative route?
There is no alternative. If you don't make it, you can't get to presentation, can you? Take your position, Sawyer,
Professor Emeterio orders, and Sawyer moves to the beginning of the course. After he makes it past the final obstacle, so everyone can learn from this cadet completing the course, the rest of you will start every 60 seconds.
And go.
Sawyer is off like a shot. He easily runs the 15 feet across the single log spinning parallel with the cliff face, and then the raised pillars. But it takes him 3 rotations inside the wheel before he jumps through the lone opening. But other than that, I don't see a single misstep in the first ascent. Not one. He turns and rushes toward a series of gigantic hanging balls that makes up the second ascent, jumping and hugging one after another. His feet back on the ground, he turns again and heads up the third ascent, which is divided into 2 sections. The first part has giant metal rods hanging parallel to the cliff wall, and he easily swings arm over arm, using his body's weight and momentum to swing the bar forward and reach the next bar, hanging 1/2 foot higher than the previous as he climbs the side of the cliff. From the last bar, he jumps onto a series of shaking pillars that make up the second half of this ascent, before finally leaping back onto the gravel path. By the time he reaches the 4th ascent, the spinning logs Arlie's brother warned us about, Sawyer's made it all look like child's play. And I start to feel a bubble of hope that maybe the course isn't as difficult as it looks from the ground. But then he faces a giant chimney formation rising high above him at a 20-degree angle and pauses.
You got this!
Rhiannon yells from my side. As though he heard, he sprints toward the leaning chimney and flings himself upward, grabbing onto the sides by forming an X with his body, then starts hopping up the conduit until he reaches the end and drops down in front of the final obstacle, a massive ramp that reaches up to the top of the cliff's edge at a nearly vertical climb. My breath catches in my throat as Sawyer sprints toward the ramp, using his speed and momentum to carry him 2/3 of the way up the ramp. Just before he starts to fall, he reaches up with one arm and grasps the lip of the ramp and hauls himself over the edge. Rhiannon and I scream and cheer for him. He made it in an almost flawless approach.
Perfect technique, Professor Emeterio calls out. That's exactly what you should all be doing.
Perfect. And yet he was still passed over at threshing.
Luca snarks.
Guess the dragons have some sense of taste.
Give it a rest, Luca, Rhys says.
How could someone as smart and athletic as Sawyer not bond? And if he didn't, what the hell kind of hope is there for the rest of us?
I'm too short for the ramp, I whisper to Rhys. She glances over at me, and then back to the obstacle.
You're wicked fast. If you get your speed up, I bet the momentum will take you to the top.
Pryor, the shy cadet from the Groveland border region, struggles on the swinging steel rods in the third ascent due to some rather predictable hesitation on his part. But he makes it just as Trina nearly falls at the shaking pillars, reaching for a rope. I can only make out the flash of red from her hair when she starts the rotating stair steps, but I hear her scream all the way to my toes as that particular rope sways near the ground.
You can do it, Sawyer shouts down from the top.
They go in opposite directions, Aurelie calls up.
Tynan, start, Professor Emeterio orders, watching his pocket watch and not the course.
My heart thuds in my ears when Trina makes it past the steps, and the drumming doesn't let up as Rhiannon is called to start. She passes the first ascent with the grace I've come to expect from her before coming to a halt. Tynan hangs from the second of five buoy balls on the second ascent, right where the ground drops out. If he falls, he's got a minuscule chance of hitting the single spinning log from the first ascent and overwhelming odds of dropping 30 feet to the ground below.
You have to keep moving, Tynan, I shout, though it's doubtful he can hear me from here.
He might be a gullible ass, but he's still my squad mate.
He shrieks, his arms wrapped around the swinging ball. It's impossible for him to reach his hands completely around.
That's the point. And he's slipping.
He's going to screw her time, Aurelie says, blowing out a bored sigh.
Good thing this is only practice, then, Riddick says, then bellows up at Tynan. What's the matter, Tynan? Scared of heights? Who's the liability now?
Stop, I elbow Riddick in the side. He's not quite as lean now. The last 7 weeks have put some muscle on him. Just because he's a dick doesn't mean you have to be.
But he's giving me so much material to work with, Riddick replies, a corner of his mouth lifting into a smirk as he backs away, heading toward the starting position.
Swing to the next one, Trina suggests from the top of the course.
I can't!
Tynan's shriek could break glass as it echoes down the mountain, and it makes my chest tighten.
Riddick, start, Professor Emeterio commands.
Riddick charges over the log.
Rhys, I shout up. The rope is between the first and the second.
She nods down at me, then jumps for the first buoy ball, clasping it up top, near where the chains hold it to the iron rail above, and swinging her weight around the side. It's an utterly inspired approach, one that might just work for me. Gravel crunches beneath my boots as I move to the starting position. Oh, look, it is possible for my heart to beat faster. The damn thing practically flutters as I wipe my clammy palms on my leather pants. Rhiannon gets the rope into Tynan's hand, but instead of using it to swing to the next ball, he climbs down. My jaw practically unhinges as he descends. Definitely didn't see that one coming.
Violet, begin, Emeterio orders.
Be with me, Zanal.
I haven't spent nearly enough time at Temple for the God of Luck to care much about what happens to me right now, but it's worth a shot. I bolt up the first part of the ascent, coming to the spinning log within seconds. My stomach feels like it's being stirred by this balance beam from hell.
It's just balance. You can balance, I mumble, and start across.
Quick feet, quick feet, quick feet, I repeat all the way across, jumping off the end to land on the first of four granite columns, each one higher than the last. There are about 3 feet between them, but I manage to leap from one pillar to the next without skidding off the ends. And this is the easy part. A knot of fear works its way up my throat. I jump into the rotating wheel and run, leaping over the only opening as it flies by once, then watching it come around a second time. Timing. This one is all about timing. The opportunity comes and I seize it, racing through the opening and turning back onto the gravel path of the second ascent. The buoy balls are just ahead, but I'm going to fall on my ass if I don't calm down and get my palms to stop sweating. Feathertail dragons are the breed we know the least about, I recite in my mind, needing every ounce of my lung capacity as I spring from the edge of the path onto the first ball, grasping it up top like Rhiannon did. The immediate strain on my shoulders makes me tense every muscle to keep the joints from dislocating. Stay calm. Stay calm. Throwing my weight, I force the ball to rotate, swinging me toward the next one. This is because feathertails reportedly abhor violence and are not suitable for bonding. I repeat motions, grasping from one ball to the next, keeping my eyes on the chains and nothing else. Though this scholar cannot be certain, as one has never left the veil within my lifetime. I continue reciting from memory as I reach the fifth and final ball. With one last swing, I throw myself sideways, releasing the ball and landing on the shoulder-wide gravel path without rolling an ankle. It's all momentum for the next ascent. Green dragons, I mutter under my breath. Known for their keen intellect, descend from the Honorable Wayne Loidsick line and continue to be the most rational of dragonkind, making them the perfect siege weapons, especially in the case of club tails. I finish as I line my body up with the first metal rod and get ready to sprint forward. Are you studying? Aurelie calls up from where she leaps onto the first ball below. Calms me down, I shoot back in quick explanation. There's no time to be embarrassed here. That can wait for later. There are three iron rails in front of me, each lined up like a battering ram toward the next. The scribe quadrant is looking pretty good right now, I grumble under my breath, then launch myself toward the first. At least the texture gives me something to keep hold of as I work my way hand over hand. The ache in my shoulders grows into a throbbing pain when I reach the end of the first rail, swinging my feet to work up the momentum for the next. The first clang of iron as the rails meet makes my fingers slip, and I gasp as terror claws its way out of my stomach. Orange dragons, coming in various shades of apricot to carrot, are the most, I throw myself to the next rail, unpredictable of dragonkind, and therefore always a risk. I move across the rail with the same hand-over-hand motion, ignoring the outright protests of my shoulders. Descending from the fake Corain line, my right hand loses purchase, and my weight swings me into the face of the steep mountainside, my cheek slamming into the rock. A high-pitched ringing erupts in my ears, and my vision darkens at the edges. Violet! Rhiannon shouts from the top. Next to you! The rope is next to you! Aurelie calls up. Iron scrapes my fingertips as my left hand slips, but I spot the rope and take hold, bracing my feet on the knot beneath me and clinging tight until the ringing fades in my head. I have to swing over or climb down. I've survived 7 weeks in this damned quadrant, and this course isn't going to beat me today. Pushing off the edge, I swing out for the rail and make it, immediately starting the hand over hand to get me to the next one, and then the next, until I finally let go, landing on the first shaking iron pillar. My brain is rattled as the thing shudders violently, and I leap to the next, barely gaining a foothold before jumping to the gravel path at the end of the ascent. Aurelie is right behind me, landing with a grin. This is the best! You clearly need to see the healers. You must have hit your head if you think this is fun. My breaths are choppy gasps, but I can't help but smile at her obvious joy. Just run straight across this one, she says as we reach the twisting staircase posts jutting straight from the side of the cliff face. Each 3-foot-wide timber rotates from its base in one of the steepest sections of the course. I quickly calculate if you fall off one of the posts, you'd probably drop at least 30 or 40 feet onto the rocky terrain below. I swallow down the terror trying to crawl up my throat and focus on the possibility my agility and lightness will give me an edge on this particular obstacle. She continues, Trust me, if you pause, it'll roll you right off. I nod and bounce on my feet, dredging up whatever courage I have left. Then I run. My feet are quick, making contact with each post only long enough to push off for the next, and within a few heartbeats, I'm on the other side. Yes! I shout, throwing my fist up in celebration as I get out of the way for Aurelie. Go!
go, Violet!" she shouts. "Here I come!" Her footwork is more agile than mine as she springs from spinning post to post. A roar sounds from overhead, and I jerk my gaze up just in time to see the underbelly of a green daggertail as it flies directly over us, headed back to the Vale. I'm never going to get used to that. Aurelie cries out, and my head snaps toward hers just in time to see her wobble and slip on the fifth post. The air freezes in my lungs as she careens forward, her belly hitting the next-to-last spinning log as if in slow motion. "Aurelie!" I scream, lunging for her, my fingertips skimming the seventh post. Our eyes meet, shock and terror filling her wide black eyes as the post rolls her away from me and she falls halfway down the cliff. The sun burns my eyes as we stand in morning formation.
"Calvin Atwater,"
Captain Fitzgibbons reads, his voice solemn like always. "First squad, claw section, fourth wing." He sits two rows behind me in battle brief. He sat. There's nothing special about this morning. Our first trial on the gauntlet has made the roll longer, but it's just another list on just another day. Except it's not. The exceptional cruelty of this ritual has never hit me this hard before. It's not like the first day anymore. I know more than half of the names as they're called. My vision blurs.
"Newland Javon," he continues.
"Second squad, flame section, fourth wing. He had breakfast duty with me." We have to be in the 20s by now. How can this be all there is? We say their names once, and then go on as if they never existed. Rhiannon shifts her weight at my side, and she abruptly sniffles, the motion jerking her shoulders once.
"Aurelie Donans."
A single tear escapes, and I bat it away, ripping open one of the scabs along my cheek. A trickle of blood follows as the next name is called. But I let that one stain me.
"You're sure about this?" Dane asks the next night, two worried lines between his brows as he clasps my shoulders.
If her parents aren't coming to bury her body, then I should be the one to handle her things. I'm the last person she saw, I explain, rolling my shoulders to adjust the weight of Aurelie's pack. Every Besgaeth parent has the same option when their cadet is killed. They can retrieve the body and personal effects for burial or burning, or the school will put their body under a stone and burn their effects themselves. Aurelie's parents have chosen door number two.
"And you don't want me to go with you?" he asks, palming my neck.
I shake my head. "I know where the burn pit is." He mutters a curse.
"I should have been there."
"You couldn't have done anything, Dane," I say softly, covering his hand with mine so our fingers lightly lace. "None of us could have." "She didn't even have time to reach for the rope," I whisper. I've replayed that moment over and over in my head, coming to the same conclusion each time.
"I never got the chance to ask you if you made it all the way up," he says.
I shake my head. "I got caught at the chimney formation and had to use a rope to get back down. I'm too short to span the distance. But I'm not thinking about that tonight. I'll figure something out before the official timed gauntlet on presentation day."
"I'll have to.
They don't allow cadets to climb back down on the final day. You either complete the gauntlet or you fall to your death."
"All right, let me know if you need me."
He lets me go. I nod and make every excuse to get out of the dormitory hallway. The weight of Aurelie's pack is staggering. She was strong enough to carry so much over the parapet, and yet she fell. And I'm somehow still standing. I can't shake the feeling that I'm carrying her with me as I climb the stairs of the academic tower's turret, past the battle brief room,
and up to the stone roof, going by a few other cadets on their way down. The burn pit is nothing more than an extra-wide iron barrel, whose only purpose is to incinerate, and the flames burn bright against the night sky as I stumble out onto the roof, my lungs straining for oxygen. A couple of months ago, I couldn't have carried a pack this heavy. There's no one else up here as I slip the bag from my shoulder. "I'm so sorry," I whisper, my fingers digging into the wide strap of the pack as I fling it up and over the metal edge of the bin. The flames catch and whoosh as it becomes more fuel for the fire. Just another tribute to Malik, the god of death. Instead of walking back down the stairs, I make my way to the edge of the turret. It's a cloudy night, but I can make out the shadows of three dragons as they approach from the west, and even see the ridge where the gauntlet lays, waiting to claim its next victim. It won't be me. But why? Because I'll conquer it? Or because I'll give in to Dane's request and hide in the scribe quadrant? My entire being repels against the second option, which makes me question everything as I stand here, letting minutes tick by before the bells sound for curfew. I climb back down the stairs without a solid answer as to why. I walk through the courtyard, empty but for a couple who can't decide if they'd rather kiss or walk near the dais, and I avert my gaze, heading for the alcove where Dane and I first sat after parapet. It's almost been 2 months and I'm still here, still waking every morning to the sunrise. Doesn't that mean something? Isn't there a chance, no matter how small, that I might just be enough to make it through threshing? That I might just belong here? The door that leads to the tunnel we took to cross the ridge line to the gauntlet this morning opens along the courtyard wall, just left of the academic building, and my brow furrows. Who would be returning this late? Sitting back against the wall, I let the darkness conceal me as Zayden, Garrick, and Bodhi, Zayden's cousin, pass under a mage light, headed in my direction. Three dragons. They were out, doing what? There were no training ops that I know of tonight. Not that I'm privy to everything third years do. There has to be something more we can do, Bodhi argues, looking to Zayden, his voice low as they pass by me, their boots crunching on the gravel. "We're doing everything we can," Garrick hisses. My scalp prickles and Zayden stops mid-step, 10 feet away, the set of his shoulders rigid. Shit, he knows I'm here. Instead of the usual fear that spikes in his presence, only anger rises in my chest. If he wants to kill me, then fine. I'm over waiting for it to happen. Over walking through the halls in fear. "What's wrong?" Garrick asks, immediately looking over his shoulder in the opposite direction toward the couple who definitely decided making out is more important than getting into the dorms by curfew. "Go on, I'll meet you inside," Zayden says. "You sure?" Bodhi's forehead puckers, and his gaze sweeps over the courtyard. "Go," Zayden orders, standing completely still until the other two walk into the barracks, turning left toward the stairwell that will take them to the second and third year floors. Only when they're gone does he turn and face the exact spot where I'm sitting. "I know you know I'm here," I force myself to stand and move toward him so he doesn't think I'm hiding, or worse, scared of him. "And please don't prattle on about commanding the dark. I'm not in the mood tonight." "No questions about where I've been?" He folds his arms across his chest and studies me in the moonlight. His scar looks even more menacing in this light, but I can't seem to find the energy to be scared. "I honestly don't care." I shrug, the movement making the throb in my shoulders intensify. "Awesome. Just in time to practice on the gauntlet tomorrow." He cocks his head to the side. "You really don't, do you?" "Nope, it's not like I'm not out after curfew myself." A heavy sigh blows through my lips,
What are you doing out after curfew first year?
Debating running away, I retort. How about you? Feel like sharing?
I ask mockingly, knowing he's not about to answer me. The same, sarcastic ass.
Look, are you going to kill me or not? The anticipation is starting to annoy the fuck out of me.
I lift a hand to my shoulder and roll it, pressing in on the sore muscles, but it doesn't help the ache. Haven't decided yet, he answers, like I've just inquired about his dinner preferences. But his gaze narrows on my cheek.
Well, could you? I mutter. It would definitely help me make my plans for the week.
Markham or Emeterio, scribe or writer? Am I affecting your schedule, Violence? There's a definite smirk on those lips. I just need to know what my chances are here. My hands curl into fists. The ass has the nerve to smile. That's the oddest way I've ever been hit on. Not my chances with you, you conceited prick. Fuck this. Fuck all of this. I move past him, but he catches my wrist, his grip light, but his hold firm. His fingertips on my pulse make it skitter. Chances at what? He asks, tugging me just close enough that my shoulder brushes his biceps. Nothing. He wouldn't understand. He's a damned wing leader, which means he's excelled at everything in the quadrant, even somehow managing to get past his own last name. Chances at what? He repeats. Do not make me ask three times. His ominous tone is at odds with his gentle grasp. And shit, does he have to smell so good? Like mint and leather and something I can't quite identify, something that borders between citrus and floral. At living through all of this, I can't make it up the damned gauntlet. I half-heartedly tug at my wrist, but he doesn't let go. I see. He's so infuriatingly calm, and I can't even get a grip on one of my emotions. No, you don't. You're probably celebrating because I'll fall to my death and you won't have to go to the trouble of killing me. Killing you won't be any trouble, Violence. It's leaving you alive that seems to cause the majority of my trouble. My gaze swings up to clash with his, but his face is unreadable, cloaked in shadow, go figure. Sorry to be a hassle. Sarcasm drips from my voice. You know the problem with this place? I tug my arm back again, but he holds fast. Besides you touching things that don't belong to you, my eyes narrow on him. I'm sure you're going to tell me. My stomach flutters as his thumb brushes my pulse, and he releases my wrist. I answer before I can think better of it. Hope. Hope? He tips his head closer to mine, as if he wasn't sure he heard me right. Hope, I nod. Someone like you would never get it. But I knew coming here was a death sentence. It didn't matter that I've been trained my entire life to enter the scribe quadrant. When General Sorengale gives an order, you can't exactly ignore it. Gods, why am I running off at the mouth to this man? What's the worst he'll do, kill you? Sure you can, he shrugs. You just might not like the consequences. I roll my eyes, and to my utter embarrassment, instead of pulling away now that I'm free, I lean in just a little, like I can siphon off some of his strength. He certainly has enough to spare. I knew what the odds were, and I came anyway, concentrating on that tiny percentage of a chance that I would live. And then I make it almost 2 months, and I get... I shake my head, clenching my jaw. Hopeful. The word tastes sour. Ah, and then you lose a squad mate, and you can't quite get up the chimney, and you give up. I'm starting to see. It's not a flattering picture, but if you want to run off to the scribe quadrant... I gasp, fear punching a hole in my stomach. How do you know about that? If he knows, if he tells, Dane is in danger. A wicked smile curves Zayden's perfect lips. I know everything that goes on here. Darkness swirls around us.
Shadows, remember? They hear everything, see everything, conceal everything. The rest of the world disappears. He could do anything to me in here, and no one would be the wiser. My mother would definitely reward you if you told her about Dane's plan, I say softly.
She'd definitely reward you for telling her about my little, what did you call it?
Club.
I'm not going to tell her.
The words sound defensive.
I know. It's why you're still alive.
He holds my gaze locked with his.
Here's the thing, Soren Gale. Hope is a fickle, dangerous thing. It steals your focus and aims it toward the possibilities instead of keeping it where it belongs, on the probabilities.
So I'm supposed to what? Not hope that I live? Just plan for death?
You're supposed to focus on the things that can kill you so you find ways to not die.
He shakes his head. I can barely count the number of people in this quadrant who want you dead, either as revenge against your mother or because you're just really good at pissing people off. But you're still here, defying the odds.
Shadows wrap around me, and I swear I feel a caress along the side of my wounded cheek.
It's been rather surprising to watch, actually.
Happy to be your entertainment.
I'm going to bed. Spinning on my heel, I head toward the entrance to the barracks. But he's right behind me, close enough that the door would slam in his face if he wasn't so unnaturally fast at catching it.
Maybe, if you stopped sulking in your self-pity, you'd see that you have everything you need to scale the gauntlet, he calls after me, his voice echoing down the hallway.
Myself what? I turn around, my jaw dropping.
People die, he says slowly, his jaw ticking before he drags in a deep breath. It's going to happen, over and over again. It's the nature of what happens here. What makes you a writer is what you do after people die. You want to know why you're still alive? Because you're the scale I currently judge myself against every night. Every day I let you live, I get to convince myself that there's still a part of me that's a decent person. So if you want to quit, then please spare me the temptation and fucking quit. But if you want to do something, then do it.
I'm too short to span the distance, I hiss, uncaring that anyone could hear us.
The right way isn't the only way. Figure it out.
Then he turns and walks away.
Fuck him.